Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight, returning, is Dale Manette, a nature photographer specializing in wildlife and landscapes of northeastern United States. And we're talking about his brand new book, I See You, Stories from Wetlands and Woods. Dale, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about your book.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me back again. Man, or should I say thanks for putting up with me again?
I love having you on. First of all, we have the passion for the Quabbin area in common. Now, I have a bone to pick to you about the title of this book. It says Stories from Wetlands and Woods. However, there's stories from the ocean, too.
Well, yeah, that's kind of wet, I guess.
Next no, time. Whoa, you can't go there. You can't go there. So what this is like, and it finally occurred to me, this is like attending one of your talks because it's the stories. First of all, it's all previously unpublished images, but you writing the stories, and I imagine those are the stories that you tell when you give talks.
They are. And I'll tell you, the story behind this book is as you know, this is my fourth book, and I do a lot of public speaking, libraries and nature groups and what have you. And I sell a lot of prints at craft fairs around the North Quabbin area. And people would come up to me and say, you know, I really enjoy your shows, but I really enjoy the stories that you tell, you know. I remember one day, when I first started into this, a guy came up to me and he said, oh boy, he says, I didn't know what to expect by coming tonight. You know, he says, I didn't know if I was going to get a zoology 101 class or if it was going to be, you know, something I could understand. And he says, thank God. He says, I could understand it. It was great, you know.
But still the main feature of the book, I have to say, is your photography.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, the photography is worth the price of admission alone. But then you put the stories with it, and it's perfect. It's like you're there, giving your talk. A lot of the photography takes place around sort of the North Quabbin area and New Salem, and just because we're internationally broadcast, I'm going to have you explain Quabbin.
Well, the Quabbin Reservoir is the water supply for the city of Austin and surrounding communities. I think it's 48 communities that it's either 46 or 48. And the reservoir was built in the 30s by taking four towns that were in this beautiful little country valley. Unfortunately for the towns, it was geologically perfect to dam up the three branches of the Swift River, and that's what it did. And they opened it to drinking water in the early 40s, and there's 82,000 acres in the watershed, and I can't remember how many acres are posted for nothing but just passive recreation. So it made the perfect sanctuary for wildlife.
And it's getting so built up around it, too.
Correct.
It's like this land was saved. And I think it remains the largest parcel of wild habitat in the state. It's got to be.
They do allow hunting. I should correct myself.
Yeah, they do, but it's limited hunting.
It is.
And there's fishing, but in limited and very restricted areas. But there is fishing at Quabbin too.
And the same thing goes for that for bicycling.
Right.
They allow people to bike, but in certain areas.
And also, a large area, the Prescott Peninsula, mostly. Is you can't get into. It's still restricted to human access.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so you have an incredibly preserved area. Who, especially if you lived near it, who wouldn't want to go there? It's like, it's an amazing place. I often go now in the fishing gates, gate 8 and Gate 43 during the summer. And, you know, people are putting their boats in. But, boy, you want to talk about just pulling up and being able to see. Like last week I was at Gate 43. There were 7 common loons right there.
Yeah.
It's an amazing place.
They're hoping to find a nest on the Potapog, which is a small pond. For listeners, it's part of the Quabbin, but it's a holding pond for the east branch of the Swift River.
Well, you know, I've been seeing in the last 2 years, I've been seeing loons fly from the non-Potapog section over the spillway into Potapog.
Right.
And they're calling there, too, and usually going out of sight into the upper Potapog. So I have to believe that would be perfect for them to nest in there.
Correct. Well, the DCR has a pretty serious loon program that they follow the loons. And loon surveys, they go out once or twice a week, which I have been part of since I started working there in the early 1980s. So if they're nesting in there, they'll find them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is a weird year, though, because the water level's really high.
And last year, they weren't successful with any chicks last year because of the vast number of loons that were on the reservoir. And they had a lot of territorial disputes.
Oh, whoa.
So they, you know, that's something that should be watched.
I've seen bald eagles there take a loon.
Yeah.
Now, there's an interesting problem. You have another species you're trying to preserve and watch out for, and you have that species predating the other species. It was amazing. He couldn't fly with it, by the way. He had to, like, paddle along the water until he got it to land.
I've seen eagles with fish do that. They latch onto something.
And it's too big.
And they have to swim. I've seen them swim hundreds of yards.
I'm always surprised when they're able to do that. I keep expecting them to get waterlogged.
Yeah.
When was your first trip as a photographer into Quabbin? Do you remember?
Yeah, I had to be 13 or 14 years old. I had a little plastic Kodak film camera.
Wow.
And I always kind of took it with me. In fact, Mark, I have pictures I took I was a little older. I was 17 or 18. This is going to really date me. But I have pictures of the original Jimi Hendrix experience that I took.
Oh, my God.
But I didn't really get.
Wait a minute. Was that at Clark University?
No.
Okay.
It was at the Carousel Theater in Framingham.
Oh, my God. Oh,
but I didn't really buckle down in photography until I started working for the DCR.
Yeah.
And then I did it because I did a lot of vernal pond work, and I document these animals, reptiles, amphibians that were in the vernal ponds.
Yeah.
And so I always had a camera with me. And I'd go out on my own once in a while, but I never really got the bug until a couple of years before I decided to retire from the Quabbin. And which I should say, I worked there for 30 years. Mm. I don't think the listeners might not have picked that up. But anyways, once I started, it just it kept getting, you know, worse and worse. And before I know it, I'm spending 3 or 4 or 5 hours out in the Quabbin in the morning just waiting for things.
Well, that's what I love about your write-ups and your talks about this is, and people need to understand, in order to get photographs even approaching Dale's level of photography, you really have to be patient. You have to sit and watch for long periods of time. Isn't that right?
You do. And you know, that's what keeps me coming back, Mark, because I never know what I'm going to see, and I never know how long I'm going to have to stay out there before I see it, you know?
And you're a year-rounder. So whenever I see these photographs you take in winter, it gets mighty cold in North Quabbin in the winter.
Yeah, the coyotes on the ice, that's a lot of fun.
I know. I love coyotes on ice.
But it takes a lot of time. I mean, I had to figure out, you know, I had seen them from time to time on the ice, and then I'd say, well, I think maybe I saw some here, you know, hiking last week, so maybe I'll sit on the shoreline up in the woods and see what happens. And through trial and error, I got to know where I could generally see coyotes in the territories.
Well, I want you to talk about one of the stories in the book. First of all, I love the title of this. I Made This Bear Famous.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
Yeah. That was, I was in a pond, and I was taking pictures of a beaver lodge. And it was about 8 o'clock in the morning, and to the left of me, I was in a little bit of a field, and I was right on the edge of a pond. And this wall, this old abandoned field, this wall went right into the water. So I had been in there photographing the beavers working in the morning, and sometimes I would see otters in this pond. So this one particular day, it was about 8 o'clock, and I was just about ready to leave. And I was Jack Swedberg, the photographer for Mass Wildlife, once told me, if you're ready to leave, wait another 10 minutes and you'll see something. He says 9 times out of 10. So I always have Jack sitting on my shoulder when I'm trying to decide what I'm going to do. And he pops up and says, if you're ready to leave, wait another 10 minutes. So as I was standing there waiting, I heard some brush crackle and snapped. And I look over to the left of me on the wall, which I was probably 30 to 40 feet away from the wall, was this black bear. And he was glaring right at me. But it wasn't a nasty glare. It was a what the heck are you type of glare, you know?
Yeah, what are you doing in his land?
Yeah. And the beaver pond was right in front of us. And I was praying that I didn't see cubs hop.
Whoa.
Because I would have had a problem there, I suspect. But anyways, he didn't move, and I didn't move. So slowly I lifted my hand up, and I turned the lens. I had a 600 millimeter telephoto lens on my camera, and I slowly turned it around, and I aimed it right at the face. And I slowly looked into the viewfinder, and I use a cable release, which is a cable that goes into the camera, and I keep it in my hand.
Mm.
So I can just click the thumb down, and it eliminates the shaking of the camera. So I pressed down on the thing, and it went click, click, and that bear turned around, jumped down on the ground and went down into the pond. And the last I saw of him, he was in the water along the shoreline, and he went around the point, and I never saw him again.
And all it took was the noise from the shutter release.
At that time, the camera that I use now has an electronic shutter. So it's totally silent. And that has helped me get good pictures of otters.
So wait a minute. How did you make that bear famous?
Well, when Chronicle on Channel 5 out of Boston has a magazine type of show on. They run every night from 7:30 to 8 o'clock. And they called me up and asked me if I would like to, you know, have a feature segment on there on my photography and my books. And I said, absolutely. So Ted Reinstein, who was the producer and the interviewer, hung around with me for a couple of days. And when I was right on the same spot when I told him that story. And he laughed and laughed. But a couple of weeks later, when the program aired on international TV, there I was telling the story about the bear, and they showed the picture that is in that book. They showed that picture on the program. So that's how I made that bear famous.
And the expression that you caught on the bear's face really explains it all.
Yeah.
He's not ready to whack you, but he's not happy that you're there.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, Mark, I've seen a lot of bears, and that's the closest I've ever come to a bear in the wild like that. And when I do the talks and I talk about this show, people always ask me if I carry bear spray with me, which I do not.
Yeah, these aren't grizzlies.
You know? No.
Unless they have cubs.
Yeah.
You know, basically, if you make a lot of noise, they're going to get out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you're between where they want to go and the bear, sometimes you can get really close. I always liken them to drunken frat boys. They're really big, and they're solid. And so sometimes they just, their body gets in the way. Whenever I see a bear, I'm like a combination of like totally fascinated. Like it just stops me in my tracks because they look, first of all, they are so black. It's a deep black that you don't really see a lot in nature, and the way they walk is wild.
Yeah, they're definitely neat animals to see, and they're so timid, you know.
Yeah, like
you said away they hear you and away they go, and it makes me wonder how many times I've been hiking or driving around New Salem. I mean, we have bears in the backyard. We can't feed the bears from
feed the birds.
Feed the bears. Feed the birds. Only 2.5 months in the winter.
Yeah.
Other than that, we're asking for trouble with the bears.
I want to talk about a lot of the other animals featured in this. First of all, there's a beautiful photograph of three young bears climbing a tree. Leave that alone. Otherwise, we'll be running out of time. But there's a bobcat photograph that's in your backyard. That's another creature. Every time I see it, I'm just amazed. They're incredibly beautiful. And I hate when people, you know, you get these news stories coming on TV news, you know, that somebody sees a bobcat walking in their neighborhood and they freak out. And just, you know, they never cause any problems. You're lucky.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the same thing with coyotes and bears.
Oh, God,
I wish they'd just leave the wildlife alone, you know.
Well, in the case of bobcats, they're not going to take your dog, probably.
Right.
It's like they're just there. A lot of times people will see them just sleeping in their backyard and having a snooze. You also got a great photograph of a fisher and a carcass. I got to have you tell that story. I don't think I've ever seen a happy fisher. Fishers always look like they're ready to rip you apart.
Well, in all of my 30-some-odd years working in the watershed at Quabbin, I do see them, but what I see is either a black-brown shot throw across the road. I saw one swimming one day. Swam across a little bit of a channel in front of me. They're not animals that you see very often, and it is one of the things in the back of my mind. It was on my bucket list to get photographs of, and I had a dentist appointment one day, and I was on my way to the dentist. This was a couple of winters ago, And fishers are one of the few animals that can kill a porcupine and feed on them without ending up with a face full of porcupine quills.
Yeah, they scoop them out like a pineapple.
Yeah, and I was on my way to the dentist appointment, and I saw this brown animal in the middle of the road that looked like an otter, but it was too small, and it ran up on the snowbank, and it kind of disappeared. So when I went by where it was, there was a stone wall, and I saw it was a fisher that was on the stone wall. So I pulled the car over about 100 yards down the road, and I got out, and I had my camera with me, and I slowly made my way up where I could see it, and it was back up near the road, but it was in the banking, and it was digging a hole. And what, as it turned out, I think a car hit a porcupine in the road, and the plow came by and plowed it over the bank and down into the ditch.
Huh.
And it was in the middle of the winter, and obviously he was hungry. And he had smelt this, porcupine. How he found it, I have no idea. But I just took my time and patience, and I got up where I took probably 55 or 60 pictures.
Wow.
And then, well, I have this camera that I use, Mark, takes 21 frames a second. So it's almost like, you know, it's 2 seconds and I've got 45 pictures.
Fantastic.
There.
Absolutely fantastic. And he's looking right at you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it was, I think it was so hungry that it didn't deem me a fault. A lot of those pictures in that book were taken with telephoto lenses. I've got, one that goes 600 millimeters. And if you put a teleconverter on it, it'll jack it up to around 900.
Whoa.
So, they may look like I was right up close to the animal, but when I'm out taking pictures, if I get anywhere near where I can see the animal knows I'm there or I'm disturbing it, then it ain't worth it for me to keep plugging away at getting the pictures. I just leave the animals alone, and I'll find one another day. It might take it, another year or two to find the species that I'm walking away on, but to me, the animals are more important than me having a picture.
Yep, absolutely. I wholeheartedly believe that. Now, you have a great photo of otters. You love otters. If there's otters doing anything and you're there, you're photographing them. On your post, it's like, what is it about otters you like?
They're always having fun. I've seen them sliding around in the winter on the ice, and they're happy with their world, and they're so wild that they just, it's like, to me, they seem like they don't have a care in the world.
Yeah.
If there is such a thing as reincarnation, I hope to come back as an otter.
Now, the population in the last couple of decades has really popped back up because they made body gripping traps illegal.
That's correct.
And that benefited otters. And there are even otters that are in the city of Worcester now. But otters are like bobcats and bears to me. Every time I see them, first of all, they're in the water a lot too, as well as up on land. And whenever I see them, they're always munching on hornpout, on little little bullheads, which they eat like potato chips. But there's something about them. It's like they're elongated. They are amazing in the water, and they're vocal too. They make a lot of noises.
Yeah, I like it when they bark at me.
That means they're telling you to move on.
Yeah.
Now, I was totally shocked in this book that there's also photos of cows.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, I a friend of mine has a big farm in Ashburnham, and she had, I think she still does probably in the winters. She lives close to the Nashua River, and the eagles have discovered a place that they can roost at night, you know, in the winters. And she told me about it. So she invited me down. So I went down, and she told me, you're going to have to walk across a field, and I'll turn the electric fence off so the cows, you know, won't bother you. And but she says, you'll see a stick up against the fence. She says, take that with you. And I said, well, to defend myself against the cows? And she said, no. She says, I hand-raised every one of those cows. And she says, they'll want to come over and get their heads scratched. And so
you were surrounded by cows.
Well, yeah. And that is a cell phone picture. because I just got through the fence. I ran the gauntlet of about 150 yards, and the cows chasing me. And I put that into my computer, and I worked on it a little bit. And I thought, I'm going to take that with me.
Yeah.
To craft shows and see if it'll sell, you know, just because I liked it.
Well, it's a cool story, too, though. Hey, yeah. Dale, we're going to have to stop. We're completely out of time. I just noticed.
Okay. Bye.
We could talk for years about this book because there's great stories in it as well as beautiful photography. My returning guest tonight is Dale Minette, nature photographer specializing in wildlife and landscape photography of the northeastern United States. And we're talking about his new book. It's really good. I See You, Stories from Wetlands and Woods.
I told my wife, people are going to have to read it.
Yeah, you have to read it.
But the title, so they won't think it's an intensive care unit.
Or it's Dale doing Tommy.
Yeah. My webpage.
We gotta go. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. Okay. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night. Good night, Dale.
Thanks, Mark.